RadioMD. RadioMD.com.
Dr. Michael Fenster is a cardiologist, a gourmet chef, author, TV personality, and host of Code Delicious. Here's Dr. Mike.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. You are listening to Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike, and today it's all about flower power. I've got my special guest, Sue Becker. She's a speaker. She's a teacher. She is an owner of the Bread Bakers Incorporated and the Real Bread Company, founder of a nonprofit ministry, Real Bread Outreach. And she knows all about flour and the power within. Sue, thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
So tell me a little bit, how did you get started? Because you're obviously very passionate about flours and breads and bakings. How did you get into this?
Well, I'm a food science major, and I graduated many years ago. But even throughout my whole adult life, even after graduating from college, I just kept studying the human body and how it worked and nutrition. And I tried incorporating what I learned, you know, into my family. As my family grew, I have 9 children, so I started, with just a
That's
few
a lot
young
of cooking.
Children. Yeah, it is. It is. But I just continued to, like I said, study and kind of always came at things with if our body's not working right or something's going on, then we're missing nutrients. And so I just kept studying how to find that balance and get those nutrients from our food. And in 1991, I was introduced to the whole concept of milling your own flour at home. From now then, I started with mostly just wheat. Now I use all kinds of grains. But the information I read made the connection with so many of the common ailments that plague so many of Americans today. It made the connection with our consuming processed flour products, bread, the junk that's in the store. And it made such sense to me that I went, I'm going to do this. So I began to grind my grain and make all my bread for my, I had 5 young children at the time, went on to have number 7, number 8, and then adopted 2 more. But I was made everything. You guessed it, I'm a very passionate person. And so white flour hasn't come into my home since 1991. I grind all my grain, whether it be corn for cornbread or soft wheat for cakes and cookies and biscuits or hard wheats for yeast breads. And I saw drastic health benefits to my family. And I became excited because the bread not only tasted good, it was delicious, but it was very healthy for my family. So I began to share the bread with others, and the next thing I knew, people were asking me to teach them how to make bread and where could they get a grain mill.
Well, I applaud you because you were way ahead of the curve, and you were so right and so prescient on so many of the points you made, which are covered a lot in my most recent book, The Fallacy of the Calorie. Why the modern Western diet is killing us and how to stop it. And really, there's just a huge, I think, unfortunately, still largely ignored connection between the change in our food and our food pathways to all this processed, refined food and the development of so many of these disabilities and diseases that we confront. I confront as a physician, diabetes, heart disease, cancers, etc. And my upcoming book actually takes a step back and looks at ancient cuisines, so many of which, really needed to subsist on things like breads and grains and baked goods and the people were incredibly healthy and didn't see the incidence and prevalence of disease that we see today. And so for our listeners, you mentioned something that's near and dear and I'm passionate about in my heart, which is refined white flour. So tell us a little bit about what it is and why it's not allowed to cross your threshold.
Well, I began to study that it was in the late 1800s that they discovered that if they sifted the very nutrient-rich bran away and the oil-laden germ away from what's called the endosperm, or better known to you and I as the white flour, that the flour wouldn't spoil. Because years ago, they knew that grains are storable. Left whole and intact, they can store forever. But once you crack that open, it begins to spoil. The oils go rancid. They taste bitter. Prior to the 1900s, bread was baked at home. They were probably clueless. They were losing nutrients, but they knew it spoiled. The grain was what was storable. But in the late 1800s, when they discovered, the white flour doesn't spoil at all, they began to sift the bran and germ away. It led to the invention of these huge steel rolling mills that could produce just massive volumes of long-lasting white flour. So instead of there being local millers, there's now these huge conglomerates of flour mills out west, and now the flour is shipped, the dead flour that I call it, is shipped all over the country, you know, and that's what we're now eating. But shortly after this flooded the market, you know, diseases became very prevalent. And what most people don't realize is white flour's been around for a long, long time, but it was reserved for wealthy people. They right away figured out that if they sifted the bran and germ part, it made fluffier, whiter bread, but only the wealthy could afford the time and cooks that could do that for them. But when the steel rolling mills came on the scene for the first time in history in the 1900s, this made white flour, white bread, food for the masses. And we've been suffering the consequences ever since. You know, diseases, beriberi pellagra became very prevalent shortly afterwards, and they had never really seen an outbreak such as this. And now we're dealing with heart disease, constipation, irritable bowel, acid reflux, cancer, diabetes, and many of these can be greatly corrected with whole grains, real fruits and vegetables, real foods.
Real foods, and you hit on it, and I talk all the time, and I'll remind my listeners once again, you know, it's all about sourcing, getting real, wholesome, authentic foods. And you can enjoy the bread, you can, you know, enjoy the steaks, you can enjoy all these, you know, great flavors that people tell you can have if you stay away from the highly processed stuff. And I loved your perspective on that. It's something, again, I've talked about and I'm very passionate about, is how these changes in food pathways have actually changed the food. And I'm blanking. I think it was Mae Brown who formed the, you know, the Anti-Bread Defamation League after these mills started cranking out the white flour and said, you know, this isn't good for us. And she, you know, for years and years, she was scoffed at, and the science at the time said, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with white bread. You know, this lady's out of her rocker. Don't listen to her. She's a fringe element. Until I think it was in 1920s, the early 1900s. So she'd been campaigning, as you said, from about the 1880s, 1890s. And they said, oh, yeah, we found out there is a little something that's missing in this white bread. They're called vitamins.
Yes, exactly. And fiber. You know, fiber was, you know, one big component. But then the vitamins, the minerals, for all practical purpose, they're all in the bran and germ. There's protein and starch, which is good. I mean, we need that in the white flour, but that's basically all it provides. All the vitamins, all the minerals, all the fiber, all the digestive enzymes, all the fatty acids. A lot of people don't realize grains and beans are seeds, and they have oils and life in them. They're life-giving foods. In fact,
It's live. It's real food.
It is. I tell people, I mean, and don't hear me wrong, I am all for eating raw fruits, raw vegetables, you know, with the enzymes and nutrients intact. But grains are truly the epitome of live foods. They can procreate. You know, they are a seed. They're bringing life. They can make a plant. They can make more food. Whereas your fruits and vegetables rot, decay, and lose nutrients. Not so with your grains and beans that are your seeds. So that's unlike any other food we eat.
And one other thing that I want to point out, too, that most people don't realize is that very often they say, well, okay, I'm going to be healthy. I've listened to Sue. I heard Dr. Mike. I'm going to be healthy about this. I'm going to buy, you know, whole grain flour.
Oh, yeah.
What they don't realize is that about 70% or more of that is just white flour, and they're just adding back, you know, a little bit of that stuff because, again, to your point, really truly wholesome flour, it couldn't sit on the shelf as long as they needed to. You know, if it spoils, they lose money, so it's not a long-term shelf product. So when you're buying it in the store, in the mega mart, and you're buying this industrial, quote, you know, whole wheat, whole grain, you're not necessarily getting the real deal, which you can tell us about how you address that by grinding stuff at home.
Right, and you're exactly right. I'm so glad someone gets it because, you know, they're going, well, I'm eating the whole grain bread from the store, and I'm like, it's not the same. And that's what everything I teach centers on just eat real food. You can go to the regular grocery store, shop the perimeter, and you can get most any real food. And now mainstream grocery stores are catching on to organics. And, you know, you can get so much more today than when I started 25 years ago, but not so with bread. You really can't get real whole grain bread because it's exactly what you said. They're putting some bran and germ back in, what they call whole grain flour. They're letting them add gluten, which is not a bad guy, but they're letting them add much more than would be there naturally, and they're able to call it whole grain. And I laugh. I actually bought a loaf of a very reputable whole grain bread, you know, by a very reputable company, and it sat on my shelf, no refrigeration, no freezing, for a year and a half. Did not mold for a year and a half. You tell me, my real whole grain bread that I make, I promise you it will mold sooner than that. So milling your own grain is so easy to do, and it encompasses so many unhealthy foods, you know, when you change to start milling your own and making your own breads and cakes and muffins and pancakes, and it's so easy to do. It really is. I tell people, if you already bake, grinding your own grain is almost as easy as taking the flour canister out of your cabinet. It's the mill that I love to use is an electric mill. I literally turn it on, pour grain in, and it comes out flour in less than 30 seconds, you know, and I have several cups of, you know, even
and
a pound
so,
of flour.
So if somebody wants to do that, and you talk about using these electric mills, is that very expensive for folks to start up and start using? Do you have to do a lot of baking to make it worthwhile?
Well, no, not at all. An average electric mill that's just so great for many home users, especially large families, and if they want to make bread, all the bread for their family, if nutrition is their goal, you know, they're a couple of $100s, and they're very easy and very fast and very clean to use. You literally, they grind a pound in 25 seconds. I think I timed it when I was writing my book.
Wow.
So it's just, it's easy. It's, by the time you get your other ingredients ready, you're there. But now, you know, for that homemaker, that that mom or family that's used to just buying everything already made, then, yeah, there's a little learning curve there. But it's so easy to do. And the sky's the limit. Then you can do corn if you want cornbread. Spelt and kamut are wonderful ancient grains that you can use. It's just really easy, but I'm going to tell you, you know, I have 9 children, and they have not, now they're older now, but growing, even in the growing up years, 3 doctor's visits in 25 years for my children.
Wow.
That's huge. So what's a $200 investment when you may see very few snotty noses, no more constipation, no ear infections, you know, no constant doctor's visits,
I better
system.
I better learn how to bake because you're going to put me out of business,
which is not
a bad thing.
Lowering cholesterol is one of the number one testimonies we hear. And when I got my first testimony, somebody wrote me about that, and they said, all I changed was the bread. My cholesterol dropped 85 points in 1 month. And I pulled
why I believe that. Why I believe that is because when you're eating the real food, and now you're also providing real fiber, not carboxymethylcellulose, which is an additive that has detrimental effects, but is allowed by law to count towards the fiber that's listed on the packages in terms of the amount of the grams of fiber, you know, per serving. You've changed the gut microbiome. Now you've got that natural, positive gut microbiome. That's going to do all sorts of good things, all sorts of health benefits. But I want to, if you can, help us walk through. So we've got our grinder. Now, what are we going to get to grind? So what would you recommend for the beginner, someone like myself? I'm all excited about this now. Went out. I've got an electric grinder. What are my next steps?
My first grain was wheat. Wheat is not a bad guy, unlike what you may be being told today. It's bred by traditional breeding methods. It's not Franken wheat. It's just wheat. And it's the king of bread making because it does have the highest gluten form and potential. So which is what you need for yeast breads. First 3 years that I started, I had red wheat, which is an older wheat, and that is what I made all my pancakes, muffins, bread, everything with. And as I moved on, I learned about spelt and kamut and corn for cornbread. You just want to buy the whole grains and grind them into flour.
Now, is it hard to get the whole grains? Do we have to go to a specialty store? Do we have to order on the internet?
You can get small quantities in grocery stores, but we have a company, the Breadbeckers, here in Georgia, and we sell grain in bulk, you know, in big food grade buckets, 45 pounds of grain in a 6-gallon bucket. And I recommend people getting it that way. They laugh. They're like, this is a lot of grain. I'm like, yeah, but when you start, you know, cooking this way, you're gonna go through it quickly. But it's not real hard to find. You can find it out there. But our company, Breadbeckers, www.breadbeckers.com, you can get it there. And,
One of the things, you know, I recommend in my research on this over the years, and I talk about it in my book, is, and I want to ask if you carry some of these. I really, when it comes to the wheat, prefer the ancient grain. So I'm talking about the things like durum wheat, the kamut or khorasan that you mentioned, Inca or einkorn. Do you carry those? Because they're genetically different than modern wheat.
A little bit. I mean, they're... not that modern wheat has been altered, like genetically modified, but they are, because they're different grains. They're still in the wheat family, but my personal favorite these days is spelt. I love the nutty flavor. It's a little sweeter than red wheat, but it's got that kind of richer, more whole grain kind of flavor, and it mills up very soft. It makes soft bread and muffins, and I tell people it's kind of the best of both worlds. It makes great cakes and cookies as well as bread. I love kamut. That's a grain we carry as well. We use it. It's kind of the grandfather of durum wheat, and so it makes great pasta, and I use it also for tortillas and coffee cake. It mills up to almost like a cornbread kind of, or cornmeal kind of texture. It's a little coarser, but it's just got a really, really nice flavor. And I love eating kamut whole as well. It's a really nice as a boiled grain, put in soups and things like that. But yeah, durum and kamut are your best grains for pasta. And what else do we carry? Spelt and kamut are our main ancient grains.
What would you recommend for the beginner? So would you get one, or would you get some smaller bits and play with a couple of these different grains?
Right.
I'm a big bread person. I'm not that I'm great at it, but I love bread, and it's sort of the staple of life. So I think a lot of folks would start with, you know, basic breads. Which grains would you recommend for that?
Well, for your yeast breads, you have to have what's called a hard wheat. And that's going to have a little higher protein, lower moisture, and it's the protein in the wheat that forms what we call gluten. Grains don't technically have gluten. Gluten's something that's formed by hydrating those proteins in the flour, and it becomes stretchy, so it's able to rise when the yeast produces carbon dioxide. So I typically recommend getting started. I tell people in my cooking classes, which they can go on our website and see cooking classes online there to get a feel of things, but to start with a bucket of red wheat, hard red wheat, it has a real nutty flavor, and then a bucket of white wheat has... it doesn't necessarily have to be a bucket, but the hard white wheat has a very bland flavor, but it's still got the protein content needed for yeast breads. But it's wonderful for things like pizza dough and things that you really want a more white flour flavor. You don't want the nutty flavor of red wheat. And then I tell people, if you know you're going to make cakes and cookies and biscuits, go with a soft wheat. And then I love, like I said, I love spelt, so I probably tell people to, you know, maybe even start with spelt, because it's kind of the, like I said earlier, the best of both worlds. It makes great yeast bread, but it also makes nice cookies and cakes.
Well, Sue, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. We'll have to have you back on again. Folks, you can check out Sue's stuff at www.breadbeckers.com. Also on Facebook.com, Sue Breadbeckers, Twitter at becker.sue. And this is Dr. Mike. You are listening to Code Delicious.